there are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. I live in Southern California, Los Angeles. This is Baja Norte. If you do not speak Spanish in Los Angeles, well, you're missing out on a whole lot. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. And for a very limited time, LeVar Burton Reeves listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/LeVar. That's rosettastone.com/LEVAR. Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and this is LeVar Burton Reads. In every episode, I handpick a different piece of short fiction and read it to you. The only thing these stories have in common is that I love them, and I hope you will too. Anthropocentrism, humanocentrism, human supremacism. However you want to refer to it, it's the belief that humans are at the top of the heap. The whole world revolves around us, our needs, our desires. We get to take whatever we want because, well, we're human. And so I think maybe one of the fun things about science fiction is that it makes it easier to decenter humanity, to think about what existence means if it isn't all about us, to think about a world without human dominance, to understand that we are simply but one of many life forms out there on planet Earth, not to mention the solar system. Today's story is set on another planet, sometime in the future, and it's about a human making a fool of himself singing karaoke before a group of non-human sentient beings. It's part of the anthology entitled Solar Punk Creatures, published by World Weaver Press. And if I may paraphrase the anthology's editor, these stories are all about finding a path toward better futures alongside other creatures and negotiating the challenges of multi-species justice. The story is by the author Rodrigo Kulagowski. He's a Chilean author, architect, designer, professor, and web developer, and he's published work in a lot of different venues, including Dark Matter Presents, Monstrous Futures, The Digital Aesthete, Solarpunk Magazine, and Translunar Traveler's Lounge. So, now, if you're ready, let's take a deep breath. And begin. Quarups Can't Dance by Rodrigo Kulagowski. I set down my boombox in the center of Ringview Plaza, right under the Algo Crystal Dome, with its view of Planet Drix. This was a bit of a provocation. It wasn't illegal, but the fact that an Earther would just display himself right in the middle of the station's busiest public space, without even pretending to be embarrassed about his provenance, was in itself mildly shocking. I got it. My ancestors were short-sighted idiots and sociopaths, unable to understand simple cause and effect. The ecocide of the Earth, especially the death of sapient races like whales, corvids, and spiders, and the last-minute rescue of a few lucky humans and octopuses had shocked people across the 1,024 systems. There was no specific punishment for being human, no official second-class status, but we were at best tolerated in polite galactic society, and generally expected to not draw attention to ourselves.
Hello, Hydrix Station!
The meter on my boombox showed I was almost breaking the local noise ordinance. I turned the volume down just a bit so I could get on with my performance without having to worry about a visit from the SecBots just yet.
My name is Lee the Human. How are you all feeling this lovely day? Or night, depending on your chosen time frame?
Nobody answered or even looked at me directly. I'm second generation and was born in the trash processing and refugees sector of the station. But to them, I might as well have stepped off a rescue shuttle yesterday wearing dolphin skin boots and a lapel pin carved from the last tree in the Amazon. I lifted up my hands.
All right, let's get this party started.
The boombox finished booting up and added holospeech to its basic sound output, as well as modulated magnetics and gravity waves. So it covered the sensoriums of over 97% of the various species that lived on or visited the station. The box's AI avatar took on his holographic form and said,
"Ready to translate your so-called singing into non-oral media, O great Master Lee."
"Thanks, Alfie. Please cue up Enchanted by the Shape of Your Fears."
"Seriously? You do know that everybody hates that song. After hearing it a few thousand times, people are rightfully sick of it, even when it's being sung by the original band. I can't imagine they'll appreciate it more when it's being sung by, well, you."
He rolled his eyes. "Just do it, or I'll trade you in for one of those new air fryer fusion reactor combos they're selling down on Spiral Avenue."
Okay, there's no need to get snippy."
His avatar disappeared, and the intro chords of the song played. I sang the first lines.
"Go on toying with me, baby. I'll be there for you. Hear me when I want love and the house aglow."
A massive quarrupt was eating a large dish of, I don't want to know, but it's wriggling under the arcade on the spinward side of the plaza. When I started singing, he turned my way, and the fleshy fronds on his head swung around, slapping his thin, plant-like, ichthery table mate in their three eye stalks. His loud voice carried to where I was, even over my own music and singing.
"Sorry, Kettle. I don't have anything against Earthlings, but I hate it when they flaunt themselves in public."
I sang the rest with gusto. Nobody dropped any tokens in the hat that I had set up in front of the boombox, or transferred any coins to the address floating above my head. Neither did they applaud, or hoot, or ping me. Most people seemed to be very interested in their screens, their dishes and glasses, anything except a human making a spectacle of himself.
Thank you. You're too kind,"
I yelled out.
"Well, that went about as well as could be expected."
Alfie appeared again over the boombox.
"What's next? Are you going to kill a dozen baby mammals?"
"Good idea," Alfie. Any tips on where to find them on such short notice? He didn't rise to the bait. What song are you singing now, O Great Master? Please cue up the karaoke dance beat vortex remix of Oh My Green Earth. He made a very realistic looking moo of disappointment. Seriously? You realize that these people already despise you, and you want to rub it in by singing a crappy, sugary sweet song about how nice Earth used to be before you and your fellow primates screwed it up? Just do it, please. He shook his head, but complied. The music started, and I sang.
We used to love this green place we called her home, but now it's gone, all gone. The birds stopped singing and the bees stopped buzzing, and the flowers, they stopped blooming.
Well-bred, open-minded, sophisticated, sentience of all sizes, shapes, and number of arms, looked at me with disgust. My implant told me they were repeating variations on
the nerve of some people. Well, I never.
And their equivalents in various galactic languages. I overheard the Quarops Ictory date Tietl saying,
"Really, Six, I can't believe you'd rather stay here glaring at that planet-wrecking Earthling."
They put extra derision into the word.
"Instead of coming to my friend's immolation party."
Their large, liquid eyes trembled at a high frequency. They stretched up their dozens of long, delicate fingers and covered their speech vents. CX's grumblings in response were too low-pitched for my in-ear to pick up, but I guessed that it wasn't the response Tietl expected. They stood up and spilt the Quarop's large food bowl all over his almost square body before stalking off. I almost felt bad for CX. I could see people's heads and eye stalks swivel between watching this piece of drama unfold or staring daggers at me. I kept singing, making up extra verses as I went along.
Yeah!
When everybody had expressed their opinion about my parentage, some more publicly than others, I bowed deeply, put down the microphone, and strode over to the boombox where Alfie was hovering.
"Okay, that was definitely one for the books," he said. "What did you think you were accomplishing with that little stunt?"
I grinned at him. CX's date had abandoned him, but he'd chosen to stay. He swiveled in his seat away from the table to look directly at me.
"Alfie?"
I asked, without taking my eyes off the almost comically large alpha predator, whose ancestors, just a few generations removed, ate small primates that looked remarkably like me.
"Do you have Quarop social etiquette in your files?"
"Of course. I like to be prepared for any species you choose to offend."
"And what do they say about the way this particular specimen is sitting and looking at me?"
One second.
Alfie pretended to think about the problem as if he needed any actual time.
"Taking into account his stance, the fact that his eyes have become slits, his unhinged triple-decker jaw, the amount of methane in his breath, and the way his fronds are waving in your direction, I'm surprised you're still in a single piece. To be honest..."
The Quarupt made a clumsy motion that combined standing up and lumbering in my direction. Alfie had time for,
"Oops, never mind,"
before I was impacted. My world became nothing but the huge, gaping maw, the smell of his breath, a bouquet of rotten meat, seaweed, and the gunk that accumulates beneath food preservation units, and a loud roar that filled my hearing. My in-ear translated helpfully.
"Stupid earthling. You think you're so smart? You come on my station with your wasting songs?"
The Quarrupt reared back, pulling one of his massive combination leg and arms up in the perfect position to pummel me into the synthstone floor of the plaza. I closed my eyes. After a few seconds, I opened my left eye and saw that the monstrous being had been reaching for the stand on top of the boombox and the microphone it held.
"Now listen! This is how you do it!"
he yelled. Then began making a series of sounds I had a hard time identifying. He was attempting to sing. It was awful. Almost as bad as my own singing had been. CX kept hitting the boombox as if he was trying to get it to play some sort of music to accompany him. Alfie manifested as a small worm with a quizzical look on its face. I mouthed, "Play something before he smashes both of us." A simple beat emanated from the speaker, accompanied by a sequence of three notes, repeated over and over.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are influencers on the internet. Which means Tubi is more popular than sponsored posts for digestive enzymes and high coverage foundation. More popular than soft launching your boyfriend. More popular than making boomers explode with rage when you tell them how much you make on a single post. Tubi, it's more popular than influencers. See you in there.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. And every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama, to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Because stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Now, let's get back to our story. CX sang long enough for my in-ear to recalibrate itself so I could understand the rumbling noises coming out of his sound membranes.
"I mourn the fall of my dear land. I mourn my people who fight from their exile to save it. I mourn them."
People had been looking at us before, expecting a good old massacre of my earthling body, but now they were really looking. Everybody knew Quarrups didn't sing.
"When they are gone, I mourn the forgotten everywhere. It is my duty to save them."
was dour. So bleak. It passed all the way over into funny. Then things got weird. The massive, shiny, purple-skinned mass of muscle and grumpiness that is your standard adult Quaropt started swaying side to side in time with the music coming from my boombox and his own attempts to sing. Each one of his footsteps hit the ground like some sort of wrecking device. Even if I hadn't been able to hear his singing, I could have felt his stomping. Xeix was dancing. If you've never seen a Quaropt before, you might have a hard time understanding how unlikely this was. If you come from someplace with fauna, imagine a large, squarish, overly serious animal, hopefully in shades of purplish-gray. Or, if you come from a machine civilization, picture the least imaginative, most bureaucratic, jumped-up adding machine. Then, add the personality of your least favorite boss, or that teacher who really hated your guts, or some in-law who couldn't stand you. That's what a Quaropt is like on its best day, when it's happy. They don't sing, and they certainly don't dance. Except this one did. "Turn up the beat!" I called out to Alfie and stood in front of Xeix. He looked up at me without stopping his movements. I tapped my left foot in time with his right one. My right arm synced up with his left. I shook my head in time with the music. Xeix looked inspired by my performance, or challenged, or pissed off. He danced more energetically. His foot lifted almost a handspan off the floor. I spun around, shaking the parts of my body I normally sit on. He did the same, slower and less jiggly. I added a movement, like when station security makes me or other environmental refugees clean the public corridors as a punishment detail for real and imagined transgressions, only without the oversized broom they helpfully supply. Xeix mirrored it back. The impromptu dance-off continued. I lost track of all the times I yelled out to Alfie to up the rhythm. We got lost in the dance, each one trying to top the other to make larger movements. Although it wasn't skillful or even competent, it certainly was something. We landed at the same time with a large jump twirl that ended with us kneeling with our backs to each other and our arms outstretched to our sides as the music reached a crescendo and dropped out. The only sound was our labored breathing. Around us, 6 dozen sentients stood, crawled, and levitated in a ragged ring. Quarups and Icteries, Drixians, Illuvians, a few embarrassed-looking humans, and a handful of those skinny gray ones I can never tell apart, all looking at us doing their species' version of a gape. My interface helpfully supplied translations of their speech and facial expressions.
"What the fuck? Is that really a Quarupt?"
And,
"Can we call the Segbots on them?"
were the most popular sentiments. These quite understandable thoughts were quickly replaced, however, with,
"Hey, where's my handheld interface? Somebody took my last coin stick."
And,
"Didn't I have my neural net on when I left my room?"
It looked like somebody had taken advantage of their focus on our dancing to steal all their stuff. Or at least the stuff that was worth stealing. Segbots descended on the plaza, formed a ring around Xeix and me, and immobilized us with their purple fields. We were questioned, of course, but I'm used to being under suspicion. We didn't have any stolen items on us, and over 40 witnesses reluctantly informed the bots that we had been dancing. Seriously, a human and a Quarup dancing while the robberies took place. The security forces even plugged Alfie into a semi-legal AI audit scanner, which reviewed his memories of the past full rotation of the station, way more than would have been needed to establish our supposed guilt. The complete lack of anything incriminating in his memories meant they had to let us go. CX and I left the plaza in opposite directions without as much as a nice dancing with you. I strolled through the station, past the knee-high habitats of smaller sentients, the kilometer-high hyper ring built for aerial species, and the myriad commercial, academic, and political subsections, until I reached the rundown air and water purification neighborhood where the guard cams were always mysteriously offline, and SecBots were not encouraged to visit.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France, which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, let's get back to our story. I walked into an all-sentients bar that was way too cheap to pay for a sign. Tayetel and Xeix were already there at our usual table in the back. "How'd we do?" I asked as a way of greeting. Tayetel turned one of their eyes to look at each of us and said,
"I haven't spoken with the fence yet, but I think it might be over 64 osmium weights."
I whistled. My Ictory and Quarup friends laughed. They were used to my eccentricities.
"What? You know these people?"
spluttered Alfie from the boombox I'd placed on the table.
Oops. Forgot to switch you back.
I reached under the boombox's bottom, opening the tiny sliding cover I'd installed, and flipped a toggle.
That's better. "Hey, Tayetel! Looking lovely, as always. Did you do something new with your eye stalks? Hey, Xeix! How's my big boy?"
"Hey, Alfie,"
they both said.
"Did our plan work?"
asked the AI.
"Yeah. Thanks for letting us switch you to your backup personality. It fools the bots every time."
"No prob. As long as I get my cut."
Yeah. Of course. What an AI wants with money, I don't know. But what's fair is fair."
"What, you think I want to be a boombox my whole life? I have my eye on a sleek, new model star skiff."
He put a lustful spin on the last word.
"Yeah, baby, that's the life. No more being carried around, listening to the awful music you organics like. Just me and the open star lanes."
I'll drink to that, I said.
We all took some of our chosen species-specific intoxicants. Tyetl swung their eyes at me.
What's our next job?
Tomorrow night, we'll go counterspin 5 modules where a different contractor won the security contract. They won't recognize us. The different SecBot companies don't share data.
But if we keep doing the same scam, word will get out,
said Xeix.
So what? Are you going to pick people's pockets with those big, stubby pieces of meat you call fingers?
Said Tyetl, who got mean when they ate the small, semi-poisonous mollusks their species used to relax, waggling the long, flexible digits they had used to lift our victims' belongings.
Oh, it's easy to laugh when we're the ones making a fool of ourselves and being strip-searched by the SecBots,
answered Xeix, who was himself under the influence of 3 different types of fungi filters.
This is why my motherboard said never to pull jobs with organics. You get so emotional,
added Alfie, fiddling with his connection to the table's stem terminal. I slammed down my mug, empty of what passed for beer around here, hard and loud. My 3 co-perpetrators stopped arguing and turned to look at me.
Xeix, buddy, have I ever told you about the ancient, revered human custom of rap battles?
So, full disclosure, y'all, I don't do karaoke. I don't even sing hardly where people can hear me. But, you know, when I was like in the 4th or 5th grade, I had a nun who told me in choir practice that I should not sing loudly. And, you know, when you're that young and impressionable, that shit sticks. And I have grown up under the impression that I had an awful singing voice. And what I'm discovering now in my life is that I just hadn't made contact with my singing voice in its natural breath-supported state as yet. And so I feel like I'm on this new adventure, discovering a part of myself that apparently has always been there, just buried under all of that Catholic shame and guilt. So, the moral of the story is, don't listen to them, the naysayers, the frustrated nuns in the world who tell you that you aren't this and can't do that. There is no one. Who should hold sway over your own opinion of yourself. And in fact, I think the whole key to anything that's challenging, whether it be singing or throwing a spiral or tying your shoes, the key is to figure it out your own way, right? Because if we listen to those who have no faith and confidence in us, we will never rise to our highest level of expression. So,
my commitment to myself before this year ends. I'm going to a karaoke bar, y'all. And I'm gonna sing my fucking heart out. Our producer on this episode of LeVar Burton Reads is Julia Smith. She is the best in the business, y'all. Our fabulous researcher is L.D. Lewis. Always happy to have you aboard, my sister. We had additional research support this season from Talon Stradley and Josephine Martirana. Editing and sound design by the extraordinary Brendan Burns, who also created our theme music. My great thanks today to Rodrigo Kulagowski for allowing me to read his story. You can find it in the collection Solar Punk Creatures. For more short fiction from Rodrigo, please visit his website, kulagowski.net. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend about it or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Like I say, share the short fiction wealth. LeVar Burton Reads is a production of Stitcher and LeVar Burton Entertainment. Our executive producers are Josephine Martirana and yours truly, LeVar Burton. And if you want to find me on the internet, I'm LeVar.Burton on Instagram, at LeVar Burton on X, or you can simply go to LeVarBurton.com. You can also join my book club at fable.co/LeVar. I'll see you next time, but you don't have to take my word for it.
Stitcher.
Saving money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid Accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.